welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Thursday, October 22nd, 2015. It's a little bit after 2 UTC. I'm Sam Minter. Yvonne Bo is here again. Hello, Yvonne.
At Yvonne Bo, not sounding like Darth Vader out of a preview of that new movie thing.
Did you actually listen to last week's show, Yvonne?
Or
parts of it?
Yes, I did.
And what did you think?
Well, first of all, let me just say this. We had an episode before where Sam sounded quite a lot worse than I did.
And in that case, it was I had some sort of congestion going on, but also there was some sort of technical thing that for some reason I had only captured one side of the conversation and had to mess with the volumes to try to make audible the other side of the This was a long time ago, but yes, it was a long disaster.
And it just made my breathing from last week like nothing. Okay, this other episode was just, you know, off the wall.
But I must say that other episode was back when our shows were like half an hour or something.
True.
And this was 2.5. So.
Yes, true. secondly, I do apologize to everybody. Look, my sinuses were a disaster last week. As a matter of fact, look, I changed allergy medications after 3 or 4 days of just complete misery last week, like I haven't had like before. I will tell everybody that if you have bad allergies and you're using Zyrtec or any of that stuff, Flonase. Flonase. Damn it, it works.
Yes. Okay. I agree. I use Flonase sometimes, and I had run out for a while and I had neglected to replace it. And I'm like, man, things are really bad. What's going on? And I was taking all my other medications, and then I was like, oh wait, I haven't used the Flonase in a few weeks. Let me go get some more and see if that makes a difference.
Man.
And it does make a difference.
Night and day.
Now,
Night and day.
I still have some, you know, other allergy issues going on, but it does make a difference.
It does make a huge difference. I would recommend it to everybody. So that was part of it. And yes, I was just exhausted as well. Look, I really... You know, Sam and I were talking about...
So, for those of you who have not listened to last week's show, we had four... We were doing the commentary on the debate.
Yeah.
It had 4 segments over the course of 2.5 hours. So, the first segment was, like, almost an hour long by itself.
Yeah.
And then they got shorter as it went on. But Yvonne fell asleep at least once during each of the 4 segments.
That is correct. I was exhausted. Like, I hadn't been exhausted in a long time.
And because of this... issue he was just talking about, he snored loudly whenever he fell asleep.
Well, okay, I snored loud. Debate. I mean, look, I've heard snoring. That's. I mean, it was loud because I had a fucking microphone stuck up near my nose. And the reality is that this microphone is not the best. Okay, either.
Were you just using the built-in microphone on your phone?
I know. I was using the headset.
Oh, with your phone or a computer?
With the phone.
Oh, okay. 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 Which kind of headset?
Not the standard Apple.
Oh, like the Apple earbuds.
Yes. Earbuds.
Gotcha.
And so, you know, and
now let me ask this one other question. Were you lying down?
I was.
I suspected, but
here's the thing. We have done this show before where I've been lying down before. I have never been that tired trying to record the show ever before. I mean, as Sam knows, we tried to squeeze it in because we did it on a Tuesday. I flew on a Monday. We squeezed it on a Tuesday. Wednesday I couldn't do because I was flying like that night. So the previous day had been very long. This day as well had just been stupidly long. We started recording well past 11 o'clock at night, okay? Yep. And let's just say that, as all you know, that debate was not thrilling by any stretch of the imagination, okay? And it was me about my worst, and oh my god, I'm sorry, everybody.
We had a couple comments on Facebook about it, and I got at least one additional email from someone who will remain anonymous, going, "That was really hard to listen to."
So. I'm sorry. Look, I next time, I think, look, if we're going to do...
Let's just put it right out. Like, if you're, like, in that state, we're not going to do the show.
We're not going to do that again.
We're not going to do that. I mean, I was tempted even over the course of... Like, after the second time you fell asleep, just hanging up on you and doing the rest by myself. I considered it. But every time I was about to do that, you woke up
again. I woke up. You know, because I was trying hard to stay up. You know, I think
at one point on the show, you started snoring. You were clearly gone. And I was like, okay, I'm just going to do the rest by myself. He'll just sleep.
Okay, I need to take a break. Apparently a forced break. Okay. All right. At this point. Okay. And we'll be right back.
We'll be right back. Snip, snip. La, 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 la. Boop. Snip, snip. Okay, so enough about last week's snoring show and snoring and falling asleep.
Yeah.
We will make sure that doesn't happen again. If Yvonne is too tired, he's just going to say so, and we'll do something else.
We'll do something else.
We'll do something else. Yeah. And also, I would mention, our original plan on debates was only that we would do the first Republican debate, the first Democratic debate, and the first one with Carly Fiorina. And I was going to say, maybe if Biden got in, the first one with Biden, but he's out.
He's out.
So I think, unless there's something really special that comes up, we may be done with debates until we actually get the Clinton-Trump debate in, like, the fall or something.
I mean, the Democratic debate was terrible. Let's be clear.
We will go back to discussing, like we did in the last election cycle, we will discuss the highlights of the debate after they happen on our next show.
Highlights?
Or lowlights?
I would say that's more appropriate term for this one.
You know, if there's looks like there's one that's going to be particularly interesting, maybe we'll reconsider, or if we get a groundswell of begging from our listeners. But otherwise, I think, you know, for the next couple debates, I mean, there's one coming up next week for the Republicans, and now we're going to have both parties do them every month. We'd always said we're not going to do all of these, so I think we're done for the moment.
Okay, all right.
You know, but. We do have our full show coming up today, and we're not going to just make fun of Yvonne and the noises he makes for the whole show.
Thank you very much.
But I think it's a fairly straightforward thing. I mean, I know, you know, I feel like I feel the lack of other topics lately because we've been doing so much election stuff, but it's really what's dominating the news lately. I mean, so we've got... election 2016, we got Biden saying he's not running and a few other developments on the Democratic side. We've got and the aftermath of the last week's debate. The Republicans have been making some noises and speaking of debates, one of the things is Trump demanded that all future debates be less than 2 hours or he was going to pull out. And MSNBC at least caved to his demand.
I'm actually going to say he's right. on this one, can I be honest? You know.
Anyway, we'll talk about the Republicans, and then we've got this craziness going on the Speaker of the House race. It looks like it may be about to be resolved. Maybe,
but I'm not.
But we're not 100%. So we will talk more about that in a minute, and then we'll finish it off with a lightning round. Anyway, that's the plan for the rest of the show, and we'll be back after this. okay, here we go. So the big news, we'll start with the Democrats. Election 2016, the Democrats. The big news, of course, is that on Wednesday, the 21st, Biden officially came out and said he's not running.
Oh.
And, you know, at the end of the debate coverage last week, and I don't know if you have any memory of this, Yvonne, but when we were discussing the impact, one of the things that we'd said is that Hillary performed strongly. And one of the justifications for Biden jumping in, if he was going to jump in, had to be that Clinton was on a downward spiral.
Right.
And this debate, she'd already, if you started looking at the polls, she actually sort of bottomed out and started going back up at the end of September. But this debate really put it, she performed strongly. She didn't melt down. There was no disaster here. And it made the case for Biden running much, much tougher. I mean, it was already, you know, an upward hill to climb for Biden if he was going to do it. But this sort of made it clear that there wasn't a lot of room there. And of course, Biden had taken a lot of time. And so we predicted last week, I'd gone from a 50-50 shot of Biden getting in to after debate, I put it at 10%. It was basically, look, you know, Biden kind of wants to run. Maybe he still will, but probably not. And over the course of the week, there was a lot of reporting that, yes, he's going to run. And but in the end, Nope. But, you know, if you listen to, I don't know if you got a chance to listen to it. I by chance did. I was, I had just dropped my kid off at school and was about to head to work. And the alert came on that Biden was about to say something. So I stayed at home a little bit longer and watched it. The whole damn thing was a campaign speech. Aside from the first couple paragraphs, he could have used the rest of the speech if he'd said he was jumping in. You know,
right.
So I really think like this really was close for Biden. It was a close call for him. And some of the reports say he only made up his mind in the 12 hours before he made his announcement. And he clearly wanted to run, but he felt
it was too late, I think.
You know, look, it was look, if Clinton was still on a downward spiral and it was a complete disaster. The last debate had been a complete disaster. He could have finessed the time issues. I mean, yes, there were time factors, but it wasn't too late.
If Hillary had just self-destructed at that debate, that would have made the decision pretty easy.
Right. I mean,
But she didn't.
And so,
despite a lot of people arguing to me that, you know,
Sanders won?
Yeah.
You know, I got a lot of that because there were a lot of the initial like focus groups and things like that had Sanders winning. And I mentioned that to a couple people on Facebook and an email to my dad, actually, that, hey, look at the polling averages. Wait a little while. See how it goes, because first of all of those things done on the night of weren't really scientifically selected, blah,
right,
blah, blah. There were online polls. There were
focus groups. Same discussion I had with everybody.
Blah,
yep.
Blah, blah. And then the very first poll came out and showed like Sanders. Then polls started coming out that were scientific polls, but that were asking the question, who won? And guess what? Most of those showed that Hillary won. But even so, it's like that's the wrong question to ask. You don't want to ask everybody who they thought won, because guess what? The people who support Hillary are going to overwhelmingly think Hillary won. The people who support Sanders are going to think Sanders won, unless it's a complete blowout and it's absolutely obvious, even to, you know, people who support one candidate, that their guy lost. But what really want to measure is not who thought who won. What you want to measure is how many people actually changed their mind. And did you convince undecideds, or did you convince somebody who was a supporter of one candidate to move to the other, et cetera? And, you know, the only real way to do that is to do a before and after of who's supporting who. And when the first one of those came out, it actually showed Sanders going pretty well. But then once you got a few more in the bag, I did a sort of before and after looking at where we were the day before the debate and comparing it to where we were now on the Real Clear Politics average. And basically, Hillary's up 4.5%. Biden, or sorry, Sanders was up 0.6%. So he did go up, but not as much as Hillary. And Biden was actually down 0.6%. And the other three don't matter, you know. And so, you know, by that measure, Hillary won. Her support continued to go up. The rate at which it has been increasing went up further. And everybody else was flat. And when you add to that the fact that the bar was different, you know, for Hillary Clinton, all she had to do was not lose any supporters. Basically, she had to not go down further.
The thing is that
for Sanders, like, he had to convince a lot of people who currently support other people to switch to him.
And he didn't.
Maybe a couple people, but not enough. Because he would have had to gain like a huge amount to catch up with Hillary, or Hillary would have had to crater. And that didn't happen. Hillary's heading up. And now the next thing is, of course, well, where do Biden supporters go? And I made the prediction on Twitter after the announcement this morning that my rough guess is 70% or so of Biden supporters are going to go for Hillary. And I noticed there were a couple places who put out, I retweeted one of them, who looked at, there were a few pollsters prior to today who had done two polls, one including Biden and one without, to compare. And they lined up pretty much with my 70% prediction, maybe a little bit less. But basically, if that happens, Clinton's back up in the high 50s percentage-wise, which is an incredibly secure place to be.
Right.
And I think, you know, for a while when she was looking really weak and things kept getting worse and worse and worse as we were getting into September, you know, we dropped sort of like, my odds of Hillary getting the nomination, which had always been like up at 80-90% in her, had dropped to like, I said, you know, if it keeps going this way, I'm putting it down to 60%. She still had the lead. She's still probably going to be the nominee, but I'll give it a, you know, if, yeah, I brought it down to 60%, but now now we're back up to like 90%+, I think, in terms of Hillary getting the nomination. And that 10% stays there. The 10% odds of something
else
happening.
What about me? What's my percentage?
I'm sorry, Yvonne.
I'm at zero.
I hate to break it to you.
I'm at zero. I'm kind of like O'Malley.
Maybe even Chafee.
Chafee. That's forgot about Chafee. Chafee was the genius at the debate.
I think, you know, look, there's still some odds that something else will happen, but they are basically require something absolutely disastrous to happen to the Clinton campaign. And look, she's shown a tendency at times to stick her foot in the mouth and we've talked all along about how people aren't very excited about her. I saw several posts today with people basically saying, oh, great, now Biden's out. There's nobody I'm excited about, you know, but yeah. So, yes, she could self-destruct. There are all kinds of things she could self-destruct on. She's going in front of the damn Benghazi committee tomorrow, and maybe that goes south, but I don't think it will.
I don't think it will either.
I think with the position she's in right now, she's going to go in there super confident, and then she's actually going to blow it away and do very well there. With all the, you know, Republicans admitting it was political and stuff, too. But, yeah, the 10% has to stay there because there's a chance that she screws things up. There's a chance she has a health issue. Who knows? But for the most part, if anything stops Hillary Clinton from being the nominee, it's going to be her. There's not like it's not like Sanders. There's something that Sanders can do that's amazing that's suddenly going to get everybody to go to Sanders. You know, that's not going to happen. If Hillary loses the nomination, it's because Hillary screws it up, not because somebody else does something wonderful.
Well, I totally agree. I think that, you know, Hillary has.
And by the way, on Biden again, I'm sad Biden isn't going to run. I think it would have been a lot of fun to watch him run. But a number of people have pointed this out. I think you tweeted an article from 538. Ding, ding, ding. Technical difficulties. Technical difficulties. Technical difficulties. Ding, ding, ding. But I like Joe. I like Joe.
You broke up on my end. I didn't hear anything you said. Can you say that again?
How much did you lose?
I don't know. All I heard was like what I said about her imploding, and then all I heard you was saying, I like Joe.
Oh, well, you basically got the point. The bottom line is that she, in order to lose, Clinton has to screw up. It's not like somebody else can do something to make her lose, like Sanders or Webb dropped out. As you know, Sanders, O'Malley, Chafee, they're not going to do anything to knock her off her throne at this point.
Right.
She has to screw up if she
loses. She has to screw up. That's just 100% correct. She has to really self-destruct.
Or have some sort of health issue or something.
Or have a health issue or something. Yep. But, you know, she does have to screw up. No doubt about it.
And then I was just saying, you know, I feel sad, though, that Joe isn't running because I like Joe. But he probably made the right call because he would have almost certainly lost in the end. He would have made it more interesting for a while. But Hillary would have won. For all kinds of reasons, Hillary would have won, and he might have weakened her in the process and made her less likely to win the general, and that wouldn't have come off great for him. So he made the right call.
Yeah. Well, so all right, so that's what we got for our buddy Joe and Hillary. What about the Republicans?
Well, let's take a break and then we'll do the Republicans.
Let's talk about the Republicans.
Yeah, we'll take a break. We'll be back with the Republicans right after this.
This.
Information.
And we are back. And I know we cheated by breaking the Republicans off into a separate segment, but notice that we did an election 2016 segment in less than 15 minutes. I think it's been like forever since that's happened.
Wow.
Because really? We usually just keep talking and talking and talking and talking.
Oh, yeah.
And that's even with me repeating myself twice because you said you couldn't hear me.
Yeah.
So, anyway. The Republicans. So we mentioned Donald Trump and Carson joined in on this, but Donald Trump started it, making his demands to MSNBC about the debate, specifically about it being the two things he had were it needs to be less than 2 hours, including commercials, and I want an opening and closing statement. And MSNBC basically rolled over and said, okay, because he threatened to pull out.
Not crazy. I mean,
yes, we were complaining about the 3 hour debate was fucking insane. But even like these 2 hour, 15 minutes, whatever. No. Come on.
It was retarded.
I realize you've got 10 candidates on the stage and you want to give them all a chance to talk. But, you know, the way to solve that. Kick some of them out.
Kick some candidates off. Yeah.
I mean,
it was just unbearable. I mean, my God. I mean, no.
And the opening and closing statement thing is reasonable. And they ended up compromising on like only 30 seconds each for those, which is okay. They can introduce themselves for 30 seconds. I have no. That's cool. I'm good with that.
Yeah. I'm good with what he requested.
What's scary? I mean, last week we talked about Syria. This week we're talking about the debates. What the hell is going on with us agreeing with Donald Trump?
I know, but he actually made a reasonable request. I mean, you know, it's just that those debates were out of control. He's right.
And they're every freaking month from now until March or something. Yeah. So the first of all, Trump was right, But second of all, he showed his pull in this. But he's like, if you don't do this, I'm out. And MSNBC basically took less than 24 hours.
Right. I mean,
they took less than 24 hours to say, okay, you got it. No problem.
We cave. You know, that's it. The ratings are going to, you know, no Trump means zero ratings, you know. Yep.
And, you know, we talked about the Democratic polls for a little bit, so we should talk about the GOP, of course. And what's happened here, you know, it's just Trump is not going away. This is the bottom line.
Well, Trump is not going away. But the thing is that a whole bunch of people have said, I mean, he's like got basically his ceiling, too. And you can't win a nomination with 20 some odd percent.
Well, no, the thing is, he can. You don't need a majority to win the damn nomination. You just need a plurality in enough states. Now, here's the thing. But there are a couple things here. What's interesting is it had looked like Trump had peaked, and then he'd gone up to 31%, and then he was down to 20 something, and it looked like low 20s, like 22, and then it looked like you know, he was bottoming out and maybe staying flat, but then just in the last few polls he started to go back up again. He started to go back up again, and he's got the very most recent poll that came out. Well, there are three polls that came out today, and they have him at 25, 28, and 32%. The three polls that came out most recently. They all covered the 15th to the 18th in the polls. And so his average is back up to 27.2. And meanwhile, what's happening? What's happening in the rest of the race? Carson is going up, up, up.
So this is just ridiculous nonsense.
Trump's lead has actually been decreasing, but that's because Carson is catching up with him. Not Bush, not Rubio, not Cruz, not Fiorina. No, Carson is catching up with Trump.
So maybe Carson. Oh, people.
And meanwhile, you'll be happy to note, of course, that Fiorina's spike after the debate seems to have not lasted very long. She's back down in the doldrums. She got up as high as just under 12% at one point in the average, right after the last debate. She's back down now to 5.5%. I know you're devastated.
I am so devastated by Fiorina's low poll numbers.
I know.
I'm gonna shed a tear.
But all these others, Bush hasn't been going anywhere. Rubio had a pop after the last debate, but has been kind of flat since. Cruz has been increasing.
Yeah, I know. But here's the thing, right? Who's leading in Iowa right now? How are those numbers stacked up?
In Iowa? Okay. GOP in Iowa. Bringing it up. Trump, followed by Carson, followed by Fiorina.
But what's the margin? What's the margin? How close are they?
Trump 22%, Carson 17%.
Clump?
Yeah, Clump.
Clump. Okay, Trump.
Donald Clump.
Clump.
Yeah, 22 to 17. And it's Trump, Carson, Fiorina.
And how much is Fiorina?
10.
Jesus. Wow, that's steep a drop off the third.
Yep.
22-17. Jesus. What about New Hampshire? Where are the numbers now and there?
We're just going to review numbers for everybody.
Sure.
Trump 28, Carson 14, Bush 9. Are the top three in.
I mean, it's crazy, but, you know, he could win those first two fucking states and he doesn't need a fucking majority. I mean, unless, you know. Now, look, something that started to happen. I know only a couple of Republicans have dropped out, but let's look. We already had the webmaster drop. Okay, all right. I mean, I don't know when Chafee's got to drop out.
Webb, by the way, is threatening to run as an independent.
Oh, my God. We're all so scared of the Webb third-party candidacy. Okay. That's really going to throw the election in turmoil. I'm still like wondering just, you know, when do other people drop out and start making deals? That's what I keep saying. When is this happening? Because these guys have got to realize at some point, pretty soon, that it's not happening unless you start making these deals.
So, yeah, I think you're look, the ones under 5% should just go. But it's not going to make a big difference because they're under 5%. But what's interesting here, I want to let's move back to Trump for a second, specifically Trump and Bush. Trump has been going after Bush the last week, and specifically the one thing that got a lot of attention this week is he pointed out that George W. Bush was president on 9/11.
Yes. I saw a little blurb about this, but didn't, you know.
So what's interesting is this debate, basically, and Jeb responded very strongly about how dare you go there. We were attacked and my brother kept us safe. And then a whole bunch of people responded by, well, okay, yeah, but look, if you look at how many Americans were killed by terrorism per presidency, George W. Bush, because of 9/11,
is number one
by a couple orders of magnitude. Like, nobody else broke 100 people.
Right.
He's around 3,000 because of 9/11, which was just under 3,000, plus a couple of other smaller events. And meanwhile, the Republicans are there's this whole, like, nothing that happened before 9/11 counts kind of thing going on. And the bottom line is, and you can argue, look, okay, it was a surprise attack, blah, 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 blah. He couldn't have really prevented it. That's arguable, but let me grant it for the moment. What matters here is not the merits of that particular argument. It's that Trump sent out a single tweet pointing out a factual statement about who was president on 9/11. And Jeb loses his shit and goes on the defensive and starts arguing about the merits of his brother's presidency when his brother is incredibly unpopular, not just among the general public, but amongst Republicans.
Right.
And so, like, it's like, you know, we've got all this Star Wars hype this week, too. Trump is doing the whole Jedi mind trick on everybody who comes up against him, but specifically on Bush. He's done this low energy thing. He's basically tricking Bush into spending all of his time talking about his brother's record. And Trump was bringing up Iraq stuff later in the week, too. And it's like, and this is just hammering Bush. And every time Bush responds to this stuff, he's basically stabbing himself. And it's like, he fell for the bait completely. And so Jeb Bush has been the one thing that has been clear on all of this, at least in the time that Trump has been on top of the polls. Because Trump took over from Bush at the top of the polls in July. At least in that time, what has been absolutely, totally, 100% clear is Jeb Bush sucks at this.
Oh, yeah, he's been terrible.
There's no doubt about it. We've talked about how Clinton was absolutely terrible for a few months there, too. And maybe she's pulling out of that now. But Jeb is just, every single time you turn around, he's saying or doing something
that you're like shaking your head.
You're shaking your head and going, what the hell is he doing? He is, you know, he is specifically doing almost the worst possible thing he could possibly do if he was serious about winning this nomination.
Right. Yeah.
And so he's dropped and dropped and dropped and dropped while Trump has gone up and up and up and up. And he doesn't seem to have any idea how to pull out of that spin. I mean, he's one of these folks who's sort of been counting on the fact that Trump was the flavor of the month and he'd just go away. But not only is he not going away, but he is specifically knowing exactly how to manipulate you into hurting yourself further. And so a number of people have pointed out that Trump may not be the nominee, but he's going to be damn sure he takes Bush with him, and Bush won't be the nominee either.
Yep. That's what it seems like at this point. I mean, it's unbelievable that this is happening. The reality is that with the war chest that Bush raised, the fact that...
And now, by the way, he's not raising money at that rate anymore. You know,
of course not.
Because everybody's going, what the hell? We're not going to put more money in this.
Right. I mean, the fact that he raised that kind of money up front and has done so poorly is just incredible.
Yeah.
It's incredible. I gotta think this would be one of the worst debacles ever of any candidate.
There have been some pretty bad ones in the past.
No, but I'm sure. Yeah. I mean, what I am saying in terms of early support, the kind of money that he raised. I mean, and the expectation was that
both in terms of his campaign directly and super PACs and everything else. And yeah, he was going to shock and awe and put out all this advertising and blah blah blah. And apparently, he has been advertising more than anybody else, but the ads have been doing jack shit for him.
Nothing. He's been getting nothing for all that money spent.
And
not one damn thing.
We knew he would be a hard sell for the Republican base anyway.
Right.
But, you know, the speculation was always that he would, you know, all of these other guys would divide up the thing and he would pick up the pieces just kind of like Romney did and kind of like McCain did. But he's been failing utterly at it. He ends up as actually just being one of all those other guys who are dividing up the base. But it's Trump and Carson who are cleaning up everything that's left so far.
That's unbelievable. That's unbelievable.
I mean, between Trump and Carson, if you add up their numbers right now, Trump is at 27.2, Carson's at 21.5. That's 48.5%. So just
barely
under
50%. Why did these jerk-offs make this whole thing like winner take all again in every state?
It's not winner take all in every state, but it's... there are all kinds of different mechanisms. There's like three or four or five different ways delegates are allocated. It's very complex. It's very messy. But the point is, it is not a simple, every state is proportional and, you know, the plurality wins. You do have to have 50% at the convention, but there are a lot of states that are winner take all. But also, remember the way these things snowball tends to be.
After you get
through the first four or five contests, somebody has a significant lead. Everybody else's money drops off and they disappear. And then, you know, usually it goes from, you know, you've got five or six serious candidates right before Iowa, New Hampshire, to you have three afterwards. And then after Super Tuesday, you've got one left.
Yeah. Question is, of course, with the Republican establishment, even with all of this, especially at the mess that they are right now, if you add what's going on in Congress.
Yeah, which we'll talk about in the next segment.
Are they going to fucking back a guy like Trump?
Well, here's the thing.
I think they rage against it all the way to the fucking convention.
Well,
because they know he can't win.
Well, actually,
or at least they are convinced that he can't win. Let's be clear about this.
So there are a couple things that you said there that to respond to. One is, yes, the Republican establishment is going to be dragged kicking and screaming, and they will do everything they possibly can to stop him, and they will throw more and more into it as we go further. Yes, absolutely true. However, with the chaos and disorganization that's going on, are they actually going to be able to bring to bear enough resources to do it?
Well, here's the thing. I don't know, but if they don't end up throwing
everything behind Bush, okay, maybe they throw everything behind Rubio.
I don't think that these same guys, okay, that are supporting Trump are the same guys that are supporting the coalition that's paralyzing Congress at the same time.
No, it's not necessarily exactly the
that's
same.
That's my thing. But it's not. But
the thing is, everywhere you look at the Republicans, they are horribly divided.
Yeah.
They're horribly divided in Congress, in the House. It's not as bad in the Senate. They're horribly divided into presidential race so far. It's not necessarily quite as bad at the state and local level, but there are all kinds of constituencies there too. And so the question is, in order for the quote unquote establishment to stop Trump, they all actually have to get behind one guy. And that's not happening so far. Everybody thought it was going to be Bush. It's not Bush at this point because he's been imploding. So, right.
But there's still time for them to get behind
someone. There is time. And I think if you had to bet, it probably is Rubio at this point. Was he third? Yeah, he's third right now.
Right.
I mean, he's third at only 9%.
But he's
the highest ranking person that the establishment can take seriously. Because he's got, you know, he was a senator, right?
Yes.
You know, and he's got a record. He's got a thing. He's been blah, blah, blah. He's been elected before. He's not a lunatic. He's not a lunatic. But, you know, more and more you're getting to the point where you have to start looking at the scenarios. Like, I still think one of these other guys will probably win, but you got to start looking at the scenario that, you know, Trump could do it. Trump could be the nominee.
I know.
There are scenarios where it'll happen. And right now, he's the one to stop. I mean, this is not the flash in the pans that all the one-off people before Romney had. He has now been at the top of the polls for more than 3 months by a significant margin. And the only one coming close to him is goddamn Carson. He's the only one who has been remotely close to Trump anytime in the last month and a half is Carson.
Carson. It's unbelievable.
Now, the other thing you said is he couldn't win the general election. Well, so far, the polling doesn't back that up. Now, he is not one of the top five that I analyze on electiongraphs.com because there still hasn't been good polling in a number of traditionally closed states. Like, there haven't been any polls of Clinton versus Trump in Colorado, for instance. There have only been two polls in Ohio, etc. So there are a number of close states that still haven't had good polling. However, looking at what is there, yes, he loses, but his best case, if you take all the close states, is actually to win by 90 electoral votes. Because there have been lots of polls of Clinton versus Trump, for instance, in Florida. And guess what? Trump is actually slightly ahead. There have been plenty of polls in Iowa. Trump is slightly ahead. So if you take, you know, it doesn't take much, you know, and North Carolina is fairly close. You could easily see that slipping away from Clinton. There are a number of states that in that Clinton versus Trump matchup are looking like they're close, that you wouldn't like, Michigan is looking close in Clinton versus Trump.
I'm going to say now, last election cycle, a whole bunch of states that look close wound up not being close at all.
Yes. I hear you. And also there's a long election cycle. But what Trump has been showing with his Republican opponents is that he has a very... Yeah, everybody treats him like he's a clown and a joker, but he's actually been incredibly smart at zeroing in exactly on their weaknesses and driving the knife in a way that these guys don't know how to react to. And looking at Clinton and how bad she is at reacting to things on the fly, do you have any doubt whatsoever that Trump can find things to get under her skin?
Yeah. I don't know. I just don't know. But even if he gets under their skin, here's a reality. Okay? Like, the numbers overall show that when you really look at what Trump's support is and how many Republicans would back him if it was not you know, if Trump wound up being the nominee, was relatively narrow. And the party is so damn divided.
That's out of date. It was. He's moved those numbers. His numbers on that are now actually pretty good. Jeb Bush's numbers are worse than Trump's in terms of the metric you just said. The people who would never vote for him. Like, what you said was true 3 months ago. It is no longer true. Trump has convinced a lot of
Republicans. No, it wasn't 3 months ago. That was last month.
Last month, it had already started to move. Now, like, most of the polls I see, like, in head-to-head things where they put, like, Trump versus Bush, Trump versus this, Trump wins almost all of them. And when you look at, and when they poll, like, would you ever vote for this person, Trump's numbers used to be bad, now they're fine. They're about the same as all the other candidates.
Look, I still don't see a Trump winning, for example.
I am not predicting Trump will be our next president. I'm just saying it is not out of the realm of the possible.
I still, you know, all of my logic tells me that it does not compute.
No, I agree. I mean, I still think that there's got to be something that, and by the way, a Trump presidency really scares the fuck out of me.
So is this me. Like, just what I think in the end winds up happening to a lot of people.
Yes.
Okay? It's just, and even to a lot of Republicans, and I've heard a lot of Republicans say so.
No, I hear you. Look, like I said, I'm not predicting it at all. I think something's got to happen to turn this around.
If Trump can't secure 20 to 25% of the traditional Republicans because they think he's too scary, he's fucked. And I really see a big chunk of them saying, no way. Dude, I mean, look at
fucking, yeah, and they all vote for Carson.
For whomever. But look, I mean, I keep seeing Fox News, even to this moment, hammering away at Trump.
Yes. Yes.
Every day.
Fox doesn't like him.
No.
But look what it's done to his polls. He only goes up.
But I still don't see a guy winning the nomination that can't get those guys, a Republican nomination, on his side.
No, I definitely see where you're coming from. And I think in the end, you're probably right, because Fox is part of this sort of a Republican establishment thing that's going to go in and try to stop him. And that effort is going to continue, but they have to pick somebody else to back.
I agree. They got something soon,
and they have to do something soon. And they've already been trying. They've been trying to knock him down for 2 months now, maybe three, and nothing they've done has worked so far. Now there's still a number of months left to go, and Trump certainly also has the ability to shoot himself in the foot. But again, so far, everything that people have been like, oh my God, Trump said that, now he's done for sure. In fact, you know, the people who like Trump love that stuff. You know,
25% in the 20s, in the low 20s.
Is it 27 now?
In the mid 20s. It's the mid 20s.
I know it is.
It's the fucking mid 20s.
But everybody else is on the floor.
A guy that has not, that I don't see clipping over 30 win the Republican nomination. And I'm banging on something here because it does not compute.
So the two possibilities there are: he wins the nomination with 30% because everybody else does significantly worse, or we go through this whole thing and we actually end up with nobody having a majority at the convention, which would be wonderful.
Which would be wonderful, but you know,
and then you get some real fireworks. But But the question is, and we're going to have to get deeper into the details of all these states and how they allocate delegates and blah, blah, blah. And it's still too early for that. Like, any of that kind of analysis, come on, let's wait till at least January.
Yes. Oh, but, no, agreed.
But yeah, there are ways that you could get to a majority of the delegates without a majority of the vote. If you are smart about delegates. And I don't know that whether or not Mr. Trump is, but so far, you know, everybody keeps underestimating him. So we'll see, I guess. But if Bush wants to continue to be a factor, he has to turn something around and turn something around fast. Otherwise, we're talking like, is it Trump, Carson, Rubio, or Cruz? Right?
Yep.
Because Fiorina's on her way down. Like, maybe she'll rebound after the debate next week. I don't know. But, yeah, at most, we're talking about those people. We could let's rule out Huckabee, Paul, Christie, Kasich, Santorum, Graham, Pataki, and Jindal. Let's just.
We're going to rule those out.
Those aren't happening. And
now the question is, of course, where do those numbers really go with those people? Because I think that a lot of those guys say that name, those names have to be hardcore Republicans.
But here's the thing. You add up all those people together. They're 14%.
Yeah. But you take 14% and add it to Rubio at how much is he?
9.
That's 23 points.
Which puts him in second.
Right. Meh. That's a big shift.
That's true. If they all like flock to one person.
But I think that those people that are saying those names, if they wanted to vote Trump, don't you think they would have said Trump already?
Well, right. But the point is that they probably won't go Trump, but they probably would split between Rubio, Cruz, and Bush. So you
say Bush drops out. What I'm saying is,
I know what you're saying. And the thing is, where you have to get is where do the Carson voters go?
Right.
Because like I said, Trump plus Carson is just about 50%.
I think maybe there's a lot of people just voting for Carson just because he's number two. And they don't want to really vote for Trump, so why don't we just vote for Carson?
You still can't believe people actually like Carson.
I don't see all these people out there just jumping up and down saying, Carson! Carson! Maybe for Johnny Carson.
I saw someone on Facebook post a picture that they said was their first sighting in the wild of a Carson bumper sticker.
Right. That's pretty, not encouraging.
Well, to be fair, I haven't seen, I'm in liberal Washington state. I haven't seen any Trump bumper stickers or Rubio bumper stickers.
I haven't seen any of anybody either.
I haven't seen any of.
I haven't seen anything of any candidate at all.
Yes. So, I'm not sure. I may have seen a Clinton or a Sanders. I'm not entirely sure.
Maybe I saw Sanders. I don't know. Maybe.
Anyway,
confirm. I did see a Sanders.
Right. Okay. The bottom line, and then we'll move on to the House Speaker race in our next segment. Republicans are still in chaos. We've been talking about the presidential election. We're about to talk about the House of Representatives. It's a freaking mess, and basically everywhere is fully on display how divided the Republicans are amongst themselves. And not in the, Obama versus Clinton way from 2008, but in a, oh my God, it's a whole freaking mess way.
Yes. Yes, it is.
Because even in the Obama-Clinton divide, it was fairly clear most of the way. There were a few outliers, but most of the way it was like, you talk to Clinton supporters and they'd be like, but Obama's a good guy, and if he wins I can respect him, and right. Vice versa for the most part. Again, there are always outliers, but for the most part it was clear that whoever won that, the Democrats would line up behind them. With what's going on with the Republicans, that's not really clear at all. You see all kinds of Republicans shaking their head about Trump and saying, I don't know what I'll do if he wins.
Right.
Meanwhile, you've got all kinds of Republicans also saying that Bush guy is a joker. There's no way I could ever support him. Yeah, right on down the road. So,
yeah.
Oh, my. It's fun, 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 fun. Okay, let's take a break, having solved that. And we will come back and we will talk about the Speaker of the House.
Oh, we solved it?
Good. Look, it's going to be Clinton versus Trump and Trump's winning. We're done.
Okay, great. Yeah,
President Trump is coming.
All right,
with Vice President Carson.
Where are we emigrating to?
I don't know.
I heard Canada voted a very liberal, prime minister.
Oh, yeah. Maybe we'll mention that more.
Is there like some Canadian island colony that I could move to that's kind of warm?
Kind of warm.
Yeah. I don't have to move to actual Canada proper. I could move some island colony that Canada has in the Caribbean.
Vancouver, British Columbia.
Sounds. Oh, great. Beautiful. I'll look it up on the map.
It's just north of here in Seattle where I am. It's
that's got to be warm for sure.
it's a very nice place from everything I've heard.
You've never been to Vancouver?
Actually, I have. I've been there once.
All right.
Anyway, we will be back after this and we'll talk about the craziness about Speaker of the House. Back after this.
You're in the Valley, AM 1620 and LiganairRadio.com. This is where you'll find your favorite songs. Everybody's doing a brand new dance now. Come on, baby. Let's do the twist. Well, they got a new dance and it goes like this. Classic music for a classic American town, AM 1620, and in stereo at LiganairRadio.com, The Valley.
Do-do-do. This is Sam from the future speaking. The amount of time between when we put this show together and when I put it out has been a lot longer than I usually like it to be because a number of life things got in the way for me, including the fact that I broke my foot. But we'll talk about that on another show. In the meantime, I did want to point out that in that interim period, a lot more has happened with the Speaker of the House race. Specifically, Paul Ryan indeed seemed to have not gotten all of the demands he put together, but nevertheless announced that he was in fact running for the position, and he will almost certainly get the Speaker of the House position. There are, as I'm putting this out, a few more days left before that's official, so who knows, it may still fall apart, but that's roughly where it stands as of now. So keep that in mind as you listen to the discussion that Yvonne and I have on this topic. So here we go. Okay, we're back. Speaker of the House. Where did we last leave this off?
We didn't know who was running. Paul Ryan didn't want to.
Paul Ryan didn't want to. McCarthy got sort of kicked out.
Right.
So the latest developments are earlier this week, after thinking about it all weekend, Paul Ryan came back and said, look, I still don't really want to run, but I will run if you meet my conditions. And so he laid out a whole bunch of conditions for running.
Yes, I heard about this.
And one of them was that the process that is used to get rid of a speaker midterm be changed or eliminated. Basically, right now, it only takes one single member of the House to raise a motion to reconsider the speaker's position. It can be absolutely anybody in the House, only one person. It's considered a privileged motion, so it trumps any other agenda the House may have, and the House has to vote on a new speaker, and it's a majority vote for speaker. So basically, the House Freedom Caucus, for instance, this is...
Which is what they were using.
This is what
honor.
They were using. They were basically saying, we were going to do this, and we will withhold our votes. You won't have a majority, and you'd be out. And that's when he said, screw that. I'm out. I'm resigning. you work this out somewhere else. So Ryan, one of Ryan's conditions is that that be changed to make it not as easy. Now, there hasn't been a lot of detail on exactly what it would be changed to. Does it just require more people to introduce it? Does it just become not privileged? Or do you make it so instead of requiring 50%, you need 2/3 or something like that? But in any case, he demanded that it be made harder so that basically a speaker is guaranteed to serve out their 2 terms absent something absolutely crazy happening. There were 3. I'm flaking on the second one. The third one is that currently
he needed a Freedom Caucus to.
Oh yes. He needs all 3 major Republican caucuses, one of which is the Freedom Caucus, to fully endorse him.
Correct.
And the third one is he's like, I'm not giving up my family time. Apparently he goes back. His family still lives in his home district, and he spends 3 days a week back at his home district with his family. And he's like, I'm not giving that up. And so.
Gotta admire that.
Yeah. And so,
I don't dislike Paul Ryan. Can I be honest? I'm not gonna say I'm whole, you know, like a big supporter, but at the same time, you know, for the most part, he's put forth proposals that have been like, I know it's the dreaded word for the Republicans, like compromises to a certain extent. You know, try to do certain things to a certain way. Maybe there was a whole bunch of things that some people didn't like and other people didn't like, but it wasn't like, you know. So my thing is that they keep trying to trot him out there for this. He just doesn't seem like the guy that these guys were looking for anyway.
Well, but
the guys have pushed the boner out.
So here's the developments from the last few hours.
We got corrected on pronouncing Bonner boner. What was the
Boehner.
Boehner.
Boehner is the correct pronunciation.
Boehner. Okay, all right. So I could use it now since he's a Boehner.
Thank you to our listener, Jen, for correcting us.
Yes, that's right.
In any case, but there have been a lot of developments just in the last few hours here.
Okay.
So after he made these demands, a lot of the House Freedom Caucus were saying things like, this is a non-starter, there's no way we can agree to these terms, blah, 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 blah. And for the House Freedom Caucus to officially endorse somebody, they need an 80% vote.
Correct.
This evening, Ryan went to the House Freedom Caucus and talked to them and sort of came out with something, not everything that he'd wanted, but something. So apparently the House Freedom Caucus voted, and about 60-70% of the House Freedom Caucus said that they would support Ryan, which is less than the 80% they need for an official endorsement. But it's enough to get Ryan to 218 votes, which is enough to be speaker.
Okay.
Apparently, though, they did not say that they would agree to his demands. Yeah. And so now it's sort of in Ryan's ball. It's in, what's the phrase go? His ballpark? His what?
The ball's in his court.
Ball's in his court. There you go. It's tennis, not baseball.
Right.
Anyway, the ball's in his court. To see what he does. And his initial statement after this was that this seems like a positive development. So he is not saying they didn't endorse me, I'm out. He is not saying they didn't meet my demands, I'm out. He says he's waiting to hear what the other 2 caucuses say. And so he's leaving the door open. So it's unclear at this point. What does seem to be the case is that Paul Ryan has 218 votes. So if he decides he wants to be speaker under these conditions, he's got it. He's got the 218 votes, which was unclear last week whether he would have 218 votes. But he's convinced enough of the Freedom Caucus to support him, at least initially, to get to 218. But if he doesn't have his demands met fully, that's still his call. Does he want to do this? And he has repeatedly sort of indicated that he didn't really want to be speaker. And mm-hmm. he would only do this grudgingly. And he was basically saying, look, if you want me to do this, you do this my way. And so far, it doesn't look like he's fully getting his way on that. But he's also got to be looking and saying, you know, Boehner himself said, there's no plan B.
Right.
You know, if Ryan says no here, if Ryan says, I'm sorry, I can't do this under these conditions, nobody knows what the hell they're going to do.
Hmm.
And we sort of listed out the possibilities last time we talked about this. And certainly, you know, and this time in the last few days, Pelosi has said, hey, we're willing to work with you to help you on this if you need it, which would be absolutely unprecedented if you did get a speaker nominee with most of the Republicans and a few Democrats or some weird combination like that. But it's within, you know.
Yeah, but it's possible. That's what I kept thinking. Yeah,
it's within the rules. I mean, they could do it, but it has not been done before. I don't know if it hasn't ever been done before, but it hasn't. It certainly hasn't been done in the last 100 years. And so we'll see. The reports this evening seem to be that it looks like Paul Ryan might do it, even though he didn't get everything he asked for. But I think that would be such a mistake on his part. Like, it would start him off in an incredibly weak position.
Yeah.
Now that he came out with those demands, he has to say, look, you know, I said it and I meant it. You know, these rules have to be changed or I'm not doing it. Period. End of story. And then if that means they don't say it, he walks away. And the thing is, the Freedom Caucus doesn't have, like, they were trying to orchestrate everything so that they would actually extract demands from the speaker in order to get their support. Ryan turned that on its head.
Right. He turned it completely around. Said, no,
I'm
not. You
want
a speaker that's a Republican, you got to come to my terms.
And not only a Republican, but he's actually a fairly conservative Republican when it comes down to it.
Right.
But, of course, the Freedom Caucus folks and a whole bunch of other Republicans are going, well, actually, he's a rhino, Republican in name only, because he was willing to compromise on immigration. And apparently, he agreed that if he does become Speaker, no immigration legislation.
Oh, that's lovely.
So it's the one concession he did make to the Freedom Caucus, apparently. But he's compromised on immigration.
Immigration legislation. What the hell does that mean? So we're not doing it. So basically, if he becomes Speaker, basically, we're just not going to do anything about it.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's great. What a brilliant strategy.
Now, the other thing they put on him is that he worked with the Democrats in 2009 on the financial crisis and let that go, the stimulus package, other things like that. So, you know, apparently, you know, ding, 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 technical difficulties, ding, 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 about how he was an arch conservative and only a few years later, he's apparently, you know, way too liberal for the Freedom Caucus here.
Okay, well, anyway, I did not hear you there for about 10 or 15 seconds, but I'm agreeing with whatever you said.
anyway, apparently 60% of the Freedom Caucus has said they would support him, but not with his conditions, so this is one of those things where it may be full. The vote is a week from the time we're recording this on the 28th. This may be completely worked out with ding, 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 technical difficulties, ding, ding, ding. Okay, sorry, technical difficulties for a little bit there. My mic cut out and Yvonne couldn't hear me, I guess. But what I was trying to say was the official vote is on the 28th. We'll see there. I guess the 28th in the House caucus, the Republican caucus, and the next day in the whole House. And we'll see by then for sure if they've gotten their act together. But we may know a lot earlier because Ryan will probably say whether or not he's gonna actually officially jump in, you know, possibly before this podcast even gets published in the next couple days. But if Ryan says he's out, we're in for a lot more chaos. If Ryan says, okay, I'll take what I got, I'm in, but does it without fully getting all of his conditions, then we've got
Ryan. He's going to start from a really bad position.
Yeah, he's going to start from a really bad position, because inevitably he's going to have to do the same kind of things Boehner did. He's going to have to agree to raise the debt ceiling. He's going to have to agree to, you know, not tie it to all the things the Freedom Caucus wants to tie it to. Either that or, because Ryan has shown himself in the past not to be one of these guys who's willing to jump off the cliff in order to make a point. He's willing to take it right up to the edge, but in the end, he does what needs to be done to keep things moving and tries to extract maybe some concessions along the way, but isn't willing to, you know, let the United States default on its debt, as an example, in order to make that point. So we'll see. It's either going to be boring and Ryan takes it, or more fireworks. Of course, the odds are always on the side of boring, but this year, you know, that's not as reliable a bet as it usually is.
Yep. We're definitely on new ground here.
Okay. Enough about the speaker race. We'll know more next week, of course. Let's take a break and we'll come back and we'll do some lightning round. Back after this. Okay, we are back. While we were in the break, Yvonne made some noises like he heard something interesting. Was it?
Well, apparently Nike, in commemoration of the Back to the Future, the fact that we're in the future, okay, back to as described by Back to the Future 2, that they actually created a pair of self-lacing shoes as described in the movie.
Yes.
That they actually are going to bring to market next year.
Yeah, and they gave one to...
They gave a pair to Michael J. Fox.
Pair to Michael J. Fox, and there's a little bit of a video, although you can't see exactly what's going on. And apparently they're doing a very limited run that they're going to auction off for charity for Parkinson's, which is what Michael J. Fox has, of course. And then they're looking at actually producing them for real next year, although they're not going to be cheap.
No, they're not going to be cheap.
But you do bring up one of the things I had on my list for the lightning round was, of course, that it was Back to the Future Day, which was the date that Marty McFly went to in the future, going from the 80s to October 21st, 2015. And so, of course, there's been a whole thing. Everybody's been posting things. Everybody's been talking about comparisons of reality to what Back to the Future said. And of course, you know, there are a lot of, they got a few things right, but a lot of things wrong, as you would expect. But it's kind of fun to note.
Well, it's kind of cool though to see the self-lacing shoes, though. I tell you what, I gotta be honest, I would like a pair of those. They're a pain of, listen, every time I go to the gym and do this stuff, my laces are always fucked up. Could I admit I have to keep retying them?
I at this point avoid shoes with laces as much as I possibly can. I'm like, come on, let's. I mean, my normal shoes I wear are like loafer kind of shoes, and they're like loafer moccasins. So they're like they've got treads, like, but they're, you know, they look okay for anyway, whatever. But I don't like tying shoes. God damn it.
But damn it, this would be cool if we could get this.
So, and people are talking about the hoverboards and this and that and this and that. The one other thing that, since a new, and not that this is something I normally follow, but the news alert came in while we were talking about this subject, is, of course, Back to the Future predicted the Cubs would win the World Series. And
the Cubs got eliminated.
They just got eliminated a few minutes ago, and sorry.
Yeah, yeah, Cubs, yeah, they just got eliminated.
So, yeah. Anyway, Back to the Future, fun. Makes me want to go watch the trilogy again. I liked those movies. They were fun.
Yeah, so did I.
They were fun, but I won't do it today.
Yeah.
Okay, next topic. Since you brought up that one, I will bring up one. I mentioned a little while ago, a few weeks ago, I got my iPhone 6S Plus. And I have noticed one distinct difference in my behavior right away.
Which is?
I use my iPad a lot less.
Well, that's one of the things I've been saying, that people, now, why iPad sales have been going down.
Now, I will say, only part of that is due to the fact that the phone is bigger and is more convenient. The other fact is that this, at this point, my iPad is old.
Your iPad's old. And
noticeably slower and has some issues.
Phone was almost broken.
Well, yes. My old phone was almost dead, and so I had all kinds of issues. My iPad is old and has issues and is slow, but the main thing is like the difference in speed. I mean,
I noticed this with my wife's phone, how fast it is. Because, like, for example, a simple thing of, like, logging on with a fingerprint. I have my fingerprint also, like, on my wife's, like, phone because I wind up grabbing it all the time.
And that's been around for a while. That's not new to this generation.
No. What I'm saying is that my 5S has the fingerprint, and then it logs on so much faster on her phone. I mean, I'm like, I put it on my phone. It takes a little bit for it to read it. I put it on my wife's phone. It's like, shoo! It's like, Jesus, you know, gosh, you know, it's like,
yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, between the size and my iPad is older, I'm using my iPad much, much less. I used to always bring my iPad with me to work. Now I usually leave it at home. And honestly, the thing is, like, the iPad is old, but now I look at, okay, do I want to replace it? And I'm not sure I do. I mean,
the whole debate.
There's certainly things the iPad is better for. Like, if I'm really going to watch a show or something, of course, it's got a bigger screen. But
yes,
I have watched shows on my phone.
You got a 6S Plus. Look, my wife has a 6S. My wife still uses the iPad a lot. Now we have a very new iPad.
And I think that does make a big difference.
I think that's what makes a difference, that we have very new iPads.
But, you know, the question does come up for me, like, when this iPad is actually dead, which it isn't yet. I mean, I'm going to tell you, do I want a new one?
Yeah, you'll want to get a new one. I'm going to tell you that you'll want to get a new one.
Maybe.
Probably. Well, we'll see.
We'll see. But it's not as compelling a difference as it used to be.
My thought right now is just to get a Pro.
Yeah, I'm not sure I want a Pro. I know you want a Pro.
I want a Pro because I want to use it for travel, basically. That's the reason.
So. Okay. My segment's over. Your turn.
I don't know.
Okay, then I'll go again. The other thing that I can't distinguish for sure if this was the phone or iOS or what, but it's really been annoying the hell out of me. And iOS just released a new update today that I haven't installed yet that maybe will fix it. Cross my fingers. But Bluetooth in the car.
Yeah.
With my old phone, on the day I bought my car, I paired it to my car and I never had to think about it again, because every time I got in my car, it would automatically repair and my audio would be coming from my phone. I never used the audio from my car itself. It's always the audio from my phone. And I never had to think about it, because as soon as I got in the car, I turned it on, it's paired, I'm ready, I'm playing from my phone, I'm done. Ever since I've got the new phone in my car, I have to tell it I want my phone every single time.
What do you mean by tell it you want your phone?
I mean, I have to go into the menus on the stupid car's audio system to select Bluetooth device and select my phone every time.
That's bizarre.
And obviously my car didn't change. The only thing that changed is the phone.
But we don't have that issue.
Well, no, I never had it before.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is that my wife has a 6S.
Well, yeah, but it may be something specific with how the 6S Plus deals with my car.
Yeah, maybe specific combination of your car and your phone.
Right, but okay, that
is annoying.
For years, I've never had this problem, and it pisses me off every time I get in my car.
I'm with you. That would be quite annoying.
I mean, it's only like I've push one button, select another thing from a menu, and then push another button. So it's like three button pushes. But it's three button pushes I shouldn't have to do.
I'm with you. I get that. That sounds very annoying.
Okay. Next up. Excuse me. We never mentioned on the show, I don't think, the U.S. Bombing that hospital in Afghanistan. It was Afghanistan, right?
Yes.
Getting all my countries that were bombing confused now. But it's looking more and more like it was, you know, a massive... I mean, not just a massive fuck up on our part, but like it's looking like lots of people in the chain actually knew it was a hospital and did it anyway, because there were reports that maybe there were some Taliban there. Not that that was fully confirmed, but also due to all kinds of, you know, conventions of war, even if they were, you still wouldn't bomb the hospital. At least not without lots of notice first that said you were going to. And so the question is, are we going to take it seriously enough? Will charges actually be brought against anybody? What's going to happen there? Unfortunately, with these kinds of things, what ends up usually happening is maybe actions get taken eventually, but usually it takes many years to get there. And then usually it's not as severe as you'd think it should be warranted for the crimes in question. Not always, but that's usually how these things end up being. We have apparently apparently already said we are going to pay some compensation to some of the victims.
That was
the
my
victims' families. I mean, this just is another example where I look at this and I'm like, this. We shouldn't be involved as heavily as we are. I mean, it doesn't really serve our interests to continue to be in this morass in this part of the world. And I understand, you know, there's an Afghani government that we're supporting and the Taliban are fighting against them and blah, blah, blah. But
the thing is that Putin's going in. And so we're gonna lose control. Oh, wait, we don't have control? Oh, shit.
Yeah, whatever. Anyway.
Putin's not going to get control either. He's just going to be stuck with a morass that has no end. Oh. Oh, okay. Well, that doesn't sound so bad. Let him have it.
Again, we're essentially agreeing with Trump on this one. Which
I know, it's insane. Yeah,
but anyway. Next up, interrupt me if you think of any you want to do. Otherwise, I'm going to do a couple more and then we'll wrap it up.
I don't.
You suck, I know.
Apple Music got 6.5 million subscribers.
What did?
Apple Music.
Oh, yeah. Okay, tell us about it.
Apple Music got 6.5 million subscribers.
Well, right. But is that good? Is that bad?
It's a decent number. I mean, you know, it's...
I'm one of them. I'll say.
I'm one of them.
I've liked it so far.
Another 8.5 million are participating in a 90-day trial. I don't know how many Spotify or these other people have that are paid. I don't know. That's pretty good. I thought. I like it. You know, it works. That's it.
Okay. I got three more little ones and then we'll close it out, I think. One, I watched a movie. I watched a movie called Mud from 2012.
Mud. M-U-D?
M-U-D. It's Matthew McConaughey and, what's her name? Reese Witherspoon. Matthew McConaughey and Reese Witherspoon. and some kids. And it's basically these kids go out and they, in the South, they go out and they find, this boat in the woods. And it turns out there's this guy there who's a fugitive. He's wanted for murder. That's, McConaughey's character. And then they have this whole little adventure. I actually liked the movie quite a bit.
Apparently it's got very, very good reviews. I hadn't heard about it.
It was a small little movie, came out, in limited release in 2012 for like film festivals, and then still a limited release in 2013. But I liked it. It was one of these sort of slow burning movies where it's not like really action packed. It's kind of slow, but there's all kinds of stuff sort of going on, and you start caring about the people and what's going on, and you know, it's okay. I mean, I'm not going to put it in the top 10 movies I've ever seen in my life, but
it got really good reviews.
Yeah, it got good reviews.
It's like
So I liked it. It was
I'll keep that in mind to watch. Okay.
It was good.
I got a friend of mine who had lunch with Matthew McConaughey. He said he was a pretty nice guy. A little smelly though, he told me.
In this movie, he certainly looks smelly.
Yeah, apparently in real life, he's kind of like that as well.
There you go. And then I read a book. I read a book called The Sun Also Rises. Not S-U-N, S-O-N. The Sun Also Rises.
Okay.
And this is a book. I saw a few articles about this a few years ago when it initially came out. And so I had put it on my list, and it came up, and I read it. The basic thing about this book is it's an investigation into social mobility in societies. So this is the notion that, you know, if you're, you know, in the elite of a country, how do your kids do, and how do your grandkids do, and how much do you move? Like, do the rich become middle class? Do the poor become middle class, etc.? And there was basically, there's been a notion in social sciences that social mobility can actually be fairly rapid, and especially sort of in open, liberal with a small L, Western societies, social mobility should be greater. And like, if you do more to specifically promote opportunity for the poor and things like that, you should be increasing social mobility, right? And this book basically looked at the main thing was they looked at using people's last names in various historical registries to try to track the mobility of families over the generations. And they looked at this in a large number of countries and in a large number of time frames, going all the way back to the Middle Ages through to the present in various societies. And what they found was an almost universal rate of social change that didn't seem to matter very much, whether you were in a highly constrained repressive society or an open liberal democracy, whether you were in a society that had all kinds of social programs or whether you were in one that didn't. And it wasn't very much different in the Middle Ages than it is now, which sort of contradicts the conventional wisdom about these things. And the other thing they found is that in general, the social mobility was incredibly slow. Much slower than you were anticipate, on the lines of the, for instance, the elite society in Great Britain is still very there's a large overrepresentation in the elite in the UK today from the people who are ancestors, direct ancestors through the paternal line, of the people who were involved in the Norman conquest in the 11th century.
Wow. Interesting.
11th century, 1066. So it's very interesting. There are a couple of holes you can potentially poke into the argument, but it seemed, to quote Stephen Colbert's old persona, truthy.
truthy.
It seemed like, yeah, okay, this makes sense. I buy these arguments. I see how this is working. It's kind of a little depressing, though, because what it shows is all of these various efforts that people have taken over time to increase social mobility basically don't work. And for the most part, yeah, there's a process of reversion to the mean so that poor people move up towards the middle and rich people move down towards the middle, over the course of generations, but it takes like 20 or 30 generations, not like 20 three or four.
30? Jeez. Yes.
On the order of three or 400 years. If you are a family that is in the elite, before your ancestors are fully mixed in with society, so you can't tell that they used to be an elite, 300 or 400 years. They found similarly, if you're a family that has been traditionally in the lower classes, 300 or 400 years before you manage to make it up to the middle of society.
I wonder how much of that has to do with...
What
are the factors?
Now, that's on average across whole families. There obviously, individuals can have events happen that cause them to jump, you know, along those lines. But on average, across the whole families, it apparently takes a really long time. Now, I'm over my 2 minutes, but the one thing I would want to say about this is the summary articles I read about this book, and for that matter, the 3 or 4 minutes I've spent talking about it, give you the main point of the book.
Unless, so basically, you spend quite a lot of time reading just to go rehash the same crap over.
Well, what it did is it went through all of the case studies they did, every country they looked at, every time frame they looked at, which evidence they looked at, what the numbers were. From an academic point of view, it's probably very interesting, but it was very, very dry and very repetitive, basically saying, and here's another piece of evidence that backs up our thesis. And here's another piece of evidence that backs up our thesis. And here's yet another piece of evidence that backs up our thesis. And so I would probably not bother reading this book itself. If you Google it, you'll find a whole bunch of reviews and articles from when it first came out. Any one of them would probably give you a good overview. That would probably be a little bit better than the overview I just gave, but you got the main point of it already. And that's it.
Okay.
And I think we should just wrap it up. Unless you have anything else you want to mention. I've, of course, got all kinds of other lightning roundish kinds of things to do, but I think our lightning round's been long enough.
I think we're done.
Okay. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. As usual, there are all kinds of ways to contact us. The best way right now is just go to Facebook. If you haven't already liked us on Facebook, please find Curmudgeon's Corner on Facebook. Like us there. And then while you're there, comment on this show or any other episodes you listen to and have things to say about. We love to hear your feedback.
Yes, we love feedback. Have you gotten any recently?
Yes, we've gotten people complaining about you breathing in last week's episode.
Okay, I'll try not to do that again.
We got lots of feedback about that.
Yes, we did.
Okay, thanks, everybody. We'll talk to you next week. Have a great time. We'll see you. Bye.
Bye-bye.